Brodie Moncur stood in the main window of Channon & Co. and looked out at the hurrying pedestrians, the cabs, carriages, and labouring drays of George Street. It was raining, a steady, soft rain driven slant from time to time by the occasional fierce gust of wind, and under the ponderous pewter light, the sooty facades of the buildings opposite had darkened with the water to a near black. Like velvet, Brodie thought, or moleskin. He took off his spectacles and wiped the lenses clean on his handkerchief. Looking out of the window again, spectacleless, he saw that rainy Edinburgh had now gone utterly aqueous. The buildings opposite were a cliff of black suede. He replaced his spectacles, hooking the wire sides behind his ears, and the world returned to normal. He slipped his watch from his waistcoat pocket. Nearly 9 o'clock. Better start. He opened up the glossy new grand piano that was on the display dais, propping up the curved lid with its inlaid mirror, only for display purposes, his idea, the better to present the intricate machinery, the action, inside a Channon grand. He removed the fall from over the keys and undid the keyblock screws. He checked that no hammers were up, and then drew the whole action forward by the flange rail under the front. As it was a new piano, it drew out perfectly. Already a passerby had stopped and was peering in. Drawing out the action always compelled attention. Everyone had seen a grand piano with the lid up, but having the action on display somehow altered every easy assumption. The piano no longer seemed familiar. Now all the moving parts were visible beyond the black and white keys, the hammers, the rockers, the jacks, the whippens, the dampers. Its innards were exposed like a clock with its back off, or a railway engine dismantled in a repair shed. Mysteries, music, time, movement, were reduced to complex, elaborate mechanisms. People tended to be fascinated. He untied his leather roll of tools, selected the tuning lever, and pretended to tune the piano, tightening a few strings here and there, testing them and resetting them. The piano was perfectly tuned. He had tuned it himself when it had emerged pristine from the factory 2 weeks ago. He tuned F a modicum on the sharp side, then knocked it in, back into tune, with a few brisk taps on the key. He supported a hammerhead and needled up the felt a little with his three-pronged voicing tool and returned it to its position. This pantomime of tuning a piano was meant to lure the customers in. He had suggested, at one of the rare staff meetings, that they should have someone actually playing the piano, an accomplished pianist, as they did in showrooms in Germany, and as the Erard and Pleyel piano manufacturers had done in Paris in the 1830s and drawn huge crowds. It was hardly an innovation, but an impromptu recital in a shop window would surely be more enticing than listening to the mannered repetitions of a piano being tuned. Donk, ding, donk, 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 ding. He had been overruled. An accomplished pianist would cost money, and instead he was given this job of display tuning. An hour in the morning and an hour after luncheon. In fact, he did attract spectators, although he had been the single beneficiary. He wasn't sure if the firm had sold one more piano as a result of his demonstrations, but many people, and not a few institutions, schools, church halls, public houses, had slipped into the shop, pressed a calling card on him, and offered him out-of-hours piano tuning. He had earned a good few pounds. So, he played A above middle C several times to get the pitch, pointedly listening to the tone with a cocked head. Then played a few octaves. He stood, slipped some felt mutes between strings, took out his tuning lever, set it over a rest pin at random and gave it some tiny turns just to deliver torque, then eased the pin slightly to set the pin and hit the note hard to deliver a cast-iron tuning, feeling it in the hand through the lever. Then he sat down and played a few chords, listening to the Channon's particular voice. Big and strongly resonant, the precision thinness of the sounding board, made from Scottish spruce under the strings, was the special Channon trademark, its trade secret. A Channon could rival a Steinway or a Bösendorfer when it came to breaking through an orchestra. Where the spruce forests were in Scotland that Channon used, what trees were selected, the straighter the tree, the straighter the grain, and what sawmills prepared the timber were facts known only to a handful of people in the firm. Channon claimed that it was the quality of the Scottish wood they used that made their piano's distinct, unique tone. Brodie's feigning over, He sat down and started to play the Sky Boat Song, and saw that the single spectator had now been joined by three others. If he played for half an hour, he knew there would be a crowd of 20 looking on. It was a good idea, the Continental idea. Perhaps out of that 22 might inquire about the price of a baby grand or an upright.